Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds once a month or so, and the man who is the fellow with all the answers, or at least most of the answers, it's Rich Guthrie is here, and he's a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, former compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count. He is our resident bird expert. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. As I mentioned, you can comment on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC radio. You could tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, email voxpop@wamc.org. You can go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop, and comment there. But feel free to call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Hello, Rich. Welcome back.
Hey, Ray. Good to be here.
It's hawk time, eh?
Hawk time.
Yeah.
Let's talk hawk.
What do you have to say about hawks, except that there are a lot of them?
Well, it sure is a fair number. Hawks are doing well, and now is prime time for hawks to get out of town.
Why? Oh, they leave town. Where do they head?
South America.
Oh, yeah?
For the most part, thousands and thousands of what we call broad-winged hawks.
There are none that stick around?
Oh, wait, no.
Oh, okay. I'm ahead of the game. All right, go ahead.
The broad-winged hawk is the guy that abandons us for the tropical climes.
Yeah.
The rest of them pretty well stick around.
Yeah.
Some of them move a little further south, you know, hang out in New Jersey, Carolinas.
I mean, wouldn't we all if we had the chance?
You know, they had their choice.
Yeah.
And some of them move in from up north. You know, our Canadian friends come down here, spend the winter with us, eating mice and voles, and then turn around and head back up again.
Fair enough. Well, so what should we be watching out for? What time of day, specifically?
Well, midday is the best time, because these hawks especially use the warm air bubbles to gain their altitude so they can rise up and glide south.
So this is a convection current of some kind?
Exactly.
Okay.
And they use the heat of the day and the thermals that are caused by the rising warm air. Just like the thunderstorms form, these bubbles form up, and the hawks take advantage of those, gain altitude, and slide on. So that plus, they take advantage of northwest winds or northerly winds, so that help give them a little tailwind. So if you got a combination of those factors, you're ready to go. Day like today, very little movement. Very little movement.
Why?
It's overcast. It's the south wind. But what that does is it creates a bit of a bottleneck. And so you have all these hawks just north of us that are sort of anxious to move. And as soon as that breaks, then they're on their way.
So the next nice, clear day, we should see many.
Yes.
Okay.
Saturday or Sunday looks to me like a perfect opportunity. And as it so happens, we could go into this a little bit later, because there's a bunch of birding groups, the clubs around the area that recognize this and have scheduled fortuitously some nicely timed field trips.
Do you want to list those, or should we do that later?
Well, we could do some. For example, the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, which is the one around the Albany area, it will be going to Camp Pinnacle this Saturday. And to get the information about these, it would be a good idea to go online, you know, because there's a lot of meetup details or phone numbers to call. So it's hmbc.net.
Okay.
And you'll find out about the Hawk Watch, that Hudson Mohawk Bird Club. The Mearns Bird Club will be going to Mount Peter down in Orange County.
Mm.
And that will be on the 17th, next Wednesday. And then the Hoffman Bird Club over there in Pittsfield will be going to Blueberry Hill.
Ah.
Yes.
Shall we not? Let's not sing it. You know.
You can when you get there.
I'm sure you would not be the first.
That's over in West Granville. And that's also on Saturday the 13th. And,
all right.
There are other places, like over in the Springfield, Holyoke area, Mount Tom, a notable place. And down in the Lenox area, the Pioneer, the mountain right outside of Lenox, just south of Lenox. It'll come to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know it's a good spot for checking out hawks.
Okay. So when do the migrating hawks get out of Dodge? When do they head south?
Well, right about now, between now and the middle of October, is the prime time for the broad-winged hawks to move out. And again, you get to a favorable spot, you could see hundreds, if not thousands, wow, of them going by. And, you know, down in Mexico, where there's that little constriction zone between North America and South America, mm-hmm, down Veracruz, Mexico, they see tens of thousands of bird-wing hawks and another kind of hawk from out west that pass over.
They must not have any vole problems in that neck of the woods.
I wouldn't want to be a vole living there, no. So anywhere between Veracruz and Panama and Colombia, look out.
All right. And do the indigenous hawks that stick around, do they resent the traveling hawks?
You know, probably not. I would say that they're just as happy to see them leave. That little more chow to go around.
Less competition. Let's go to Daryl in Poughkeepsie. Daryl, you're first with Rich Guthrie.
Hi. I called this years ago about mourning doves, and that's what I'm calling about today. Okay. I was told they were the worst nest builders in the bird world.
not very clever when it comes to architecture. No.
Really?
No. They would lay two eggs a year, and one would roll out like clockwork. So I put a little wire mesh under it to support the nest, and they've come back every year for about 10, 11 years, something like that. But this year, they didn't come back to the nest. They're on the ground in my flower bed.
Wow.
In among some black-eyed Susans, a pair of them. And I was wondering, first of all, I didn't know that they lived on the ground ever. And I'm wondering why they didn't go back to their nest, or maybe it's a new couple.
Well, I suspect it depends on they don't live that long that they would be sticking around like that. So it probably is a new generation of them that just simply learned to like what you have to offer there and felt safe enough to be on the ground, as best I can say. It is unusual. They do build a nest in a tree, a flimsy nest as it is.
Yeah, they're terrible, terrible nests. It's hilarious, actually.
Yes, well, I've seen them use
a 40 degree pitch.
Well, maybe they're drunk.
There's no accounting for style, is there? But I'll tell you, I've seen them nest in more favorable conditions, unusual spots. For example, an abandoned or used robin's nest, and another one on a flower pot on a windowsill, and another one on a simple windowsill on an office building at the environmental department where I worked. So, you know, they're not very choosy, and sometimes they make curious and strange and sometimes unfortunate choices.
Daryl, thanks for the call. It seems that natural selection would be quick to say so long to a species that isn't too good at making a home.
You would think. But the mourning dove is clear evidence that those rules don't always apply.
And birds that decide to live in a flower bed on the ground, I can't imagine they would live very long.
Especially if there are cats around. I mean, that makes them easy targets. And some birds, unfortunately, don't have the options to nest in a tree. It's not in their acumen. They're not in their gene system. So those are very vulnerable to predation from ground predators.
Let's go over to Elliot in Sharon Springs. Elliot, you're on.
Hey, Rich, this is Elliot.
Hi there, Elliot.
How you doing?
Great.
Got a question about great horned owls. We seem to have had a precipitous drop in them over the last few years.
Yes.
And I don't know whether that's widespread or just locally.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that, because I was having a similar conversation with a friend of mine recently, and we, too, were observing the same thing. Now, great horned owls, they're the big, powerful predator of the night. That seems to take no quarters. However, you know, their numbers seem to have dropped. And curiously enough, the barred owl numbers seem to have increased. And this is all conjecture at the moment, and it would take a little more investigation to verify these observations. But I do think that, my buddy also was coming up with these thinkings, is that the barred owl is somehow, smaller than it is displacing the great horned owl. It seems like an unlikely match, but go ahead.
My experience is, yes, that the bard is moving into the my impression is the bard is moving into the habitat that is vacated by the great horned.
Okay. So, in other words, filling the vacuum.
That's what I think. I mean, in Sharon at 1,800 feet or so, we've always been the cusp. You'd occasionally hear a bard. You could always hear a great horn. Great horn nested there for years. Go a little further, a little higher, a little further in the woods, you get the great horn, the bard. And now in a village of like 1,200, absolutely solid beginning of great horn country, summer and winter. And then out in the flats, the sand flats, the open country, in the Mohawk Valley, solid great horn. Hmm. And the great horn diminished up on at the 1,800 foot line, and then a few years we began to hear more and more bard there. And then I've just now started to hear great horn. I'm just starting to hear bard in the village a little bit. And I haven't heard a great horn there in,
Obviously, something is going on. Now, what the cause and effect is, pattern, I don't know. But there is something cooking out there. And let's keep an eye on it and see which direction it's going to go in the long term.
All right, Elliot, thanks a lot. Now, you have mentioned before, Rich, and we have to take a break here in a moment, that sometimes birds will just change their geographic locations a little bit. So is it possible that the great horned have moved to, say, Utica?
Well, it could very well be. And it's hard to say exactly what's going on with them. But it could be one of these, you know, we have these subtle hints of global climate change.
Yeah.
And this may be just another piece of that evidence stream.
Okay.
Don't know.
Let's take a break here. It's 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We talk birds. 1-800-348-2551. Back in a flash.
Support comes from Autobahn Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering service, repair, and diagnosis of imports, specializing in late model Volkswagen, Audi, and BMW. AutobahnTechnic.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, Rhinebeck and New Paltz, providing professional picture framing, fine art materials for students, professionals, and the public. The Atwater Art Gallery upstairs in Rhinebeck. RhinebeckArt.com. The Cheese Traveler, Delaware Avenue, Albany, cheese, sandwich, and specialty food shop offering classes and tastings. TheCheeseTraveler.com. And the Springfield Symphony Orchestra, launching its 71st anniversary season with concerts from Beethoven to the Beatles, springfieldsymphony.org for tickets and information.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is here. Ray Graff here as well. And Rich, this one comes via email. Cheryl, I hope I have it correct. One way or the other's got to be right. Hi, love the show. Two questions, please. One, I've heard we are due for our first snowfall on September 24th. I hope you're wrong, Cheryl.
Please be wrong.
She wants to know, how would that affect migration?
Probably not. I mean, birds don't pay attention to local weather.
Yeah,
it's all about lengthening or the shortening of the daylight.
Yeah,
and that's what causes them to move. Local weather will have a dramatic effect on some food source availability, especially in the spring when it comes to ice storms that covers some of the fruit available food.
Yeah.
But not now.
Okay. And then the second question, what exactly are broad-winged hawks? Names, please. Thank you.
Names, please.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready?
Ready.
Broad-winged hawk.
That's the name.
That's the name.
Okay. And that's exactly what they are.
Yeah. However, it is part of the group of hawks that have wide wings. And as a group.
Okay, so there are more than one broad wing.
Wide wing hawk.
Okay, wide wing, but not broad wing.
Well, yes, but it's sort of like cardinal red bird. You know, there's one cardinal and there's several cardinal red birds.
Been a long day, Rich. Stop confusing me, all right?
Anyway, the wide wing hawks are called the Buteos, B-U-T-E-O, B-U-T-E-A-O, hawks. And they have wide wings and a wide tail, and they use that as a flight surface so they can ride the air thermals effortlessly.
Hmm.
And so the red-tailed hawk, the red-shouldered hawk, and the broad-winged hawk are notable Buteo species of wide-winged hawks.
Okay, back to the phones we go, and Alan in Saratoga. Alan, you're on.
Yes. this is kind of similar to the hawk issue. What happened to all of our whippoorwills?
Good question. Don't know.
Okay.
They, as well as the nighthawk, which we used to refer to as the common nighthawk. We still do officially, but it's not common anymore. Mm. The whippoorwills and the nighthawks are nighttime feeding, insect-eating birds, aerial birds. They fly around at night searching for large moths primarily. Both the nighthawk and the whippoorwill numbers have declined dramatically over the years. And the exact cause, don't know for sure, but it probably has something to do with available food and, of course, habitat. Now, the whippoorwill is a ground-nesting bird species, and they may have become vulnerable to some of the other predation that we mentioned earlier, especially feral or at-loose house cats.
Mm.
But the other factors are hard to say, but they were once familiar in the Hudson and Connecticut River valleys, but not so much anymore. And we lament their loss.
Well, I mean, yeah, we do.
But cats have been, you know, widespread for a long, long time.
Yes, it's very true.
So would that be the reason?
It could be in that with more and more encroachment of building and opening of woodlots and the like where whippoorwills might have once nested, there's inevitably the inclusion of outdoor cats, and that's just a suggestion.
Okay.
There are other birds that have shown similar types of effects of habitat loss and intrusion, predator intrusion.
All right, before the next call, can you do a whippoorwill call for me?
I can say what it says. Are you
right,
ready?
Ready.
Whippoorwill. Whippoorwill.
Well, you are off your game.
I know.
I tell you, A, you're confusing, and B, you're not putting in the effort. And
to whistle the whippoorwill call,
yeah.
I would need talent beyond my. It just has that. So the name suggests its song. It's in all night long. Okay. Whippoorwill. Whippoorwill.
Right.
Whippoorwill.
Right. You don't want to try? That's fine. Shelley in Clifton Park. Shelley, you're on.
Hi. Should I talk on the phone and then turn off the radio? I'm not sure.
I think you should turn off your radio. We're not hearing any feedback at this time, but yeah, talk
okay.
on the phone, and then when you don't hear us anymore, then turn the radio back on.
Okay, fine, because
okay.
I'm on a cell, and I don't know, and I've never called before.
Well, nice to have you here.
Thank you. My question is this. Yesterday afternoon, traveling south on I-87 from Moreau Lake down toward Clifton Park, I saw on the side of the highway a bird that I saw from the back, and I saw his back and wings spread as he was landing on a tree. And I'm almost positive it was a kind of hawk, but I know that it wasn't a red-tailed hawk because I've seen them around my house a lot. This one's back and wing spread was very kind of mottled orange sort of looking, and I had no idea what I'd seen. Do you know what that would have been?
I will offer a suggestion that it was a red-shouldered hawk. And they have, I'm showing Ray a picture in the Sibley birds.
Yeah, you're showing me a lot of pictures. I have no idea. Oh, that one.
That one.
Yeah, that would be the
red-shouldered, one of those wide-winged hawks, yes.
Sure.
Yes, it did have wide wings, you're right.
Yes, and they do have, the adult birds have quite a bit of reddish-orange breast and underwing pattern. So, and the other possibility would be a northern harrier. The young northern harrier will also show reddish color and orangish color underneath, but
okay,
not
but
as dramatic.
This was not underneath, so that's the odd thing. It was on the back.
Oh, then that the red-shouldered hawk, as the name implies, will have that coloration.
Okay, so definitely that one.
It sounds like it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Shelley, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Now, I noticed in the book you just held up.
Yes.
It has roadside hawks.
Roadside hawk.
Well, what was that, singular. A hawk that didn't make it?
Well,
what
they live
mean?
Along the shoulder of the highway.
They really live on the shoulder.
Well, that's where whoever named the bird give it that attribute. And that's not one that's found around here. That's a very rare bird even in Arizona and Texas.
Roadside hawk.
Roadside hawk. It's a peculiar name because we have a lot of hawks around here that favor the shoulders of highways, mainly because there's a lot of food along the highways.
Right.
Live food, not necessarily roadkill food.
Okay, let's go to Margie in Olive Bridge. You're on.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. It's so nice to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a, so we have a a pair of red-shouldered hawks who live close to us.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to hang around all winter long.
Some do, yes.
Okay, I feel so honored that they do.
Well, I would also if I were you. That would be an honor.
Yeah, it's really, really delightful. Can you demonstrate the difference between the barred owl and the great horned owl, what they sound like?
Oh, thank you for this. Thank you very much.
You're making Ray very happy.
All right,
smile.
Go ahead there, Rich.
I live to make Ray happy.
Yes, well, here we go. Okay. The great horned owl is a typical, the familiar sound of night goes something like, hoo, 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 hoo. Happy Ray. Hoo, 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 hoo.
Okay.
All right. And then they'll go back and forth like that. Now, the great horned owl, they take that a little step further. They are more the choir hawk out there. They go sort of like, ooh, 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 ooh.
Oh, yeah. We have both of those guys.
Yes, right.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's the most exciting thing. It's a great reason to leave the window open at night.
Exactly. Or when the weather gets a little chilly, you can put one of those baby room monitors outside.
What a brilliant idea.
He's good with those ideas.
I have one last question, and then I'll let you get on with your life.
You can ask as many questions as you like.
Yeah, as you can tell, we really don't have much of a life. So, do your worst.
So, right now, I always have the black whale sunflower seeds out.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And suet. Mm-hmm. And also nectar for the hummingbirds. For the winter time, should I rethink what I have out in the seed department?
Nope. You're doing good. Those are three excellent food sources for our birds during the summer months. Leave out the nectar.
Right.
And in the winter, the sunflower seed and suet will magic formula. I would add also some cracked corn.
Okay.
To keep the jays and the doves and the sparrows happy, but the rest of that all well and good. But and to add to it, if you have some thistle seed, that will be good for the goldfinches and siskins if you have any. Olive Bridge ought to have a few siskins.
The finches seem to love the sunflower seeds.
Oh, they do. They do.
Yeah, I want to make them extremely happy because we have a lovely little population here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call.
Well, thank you, guys. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for eliciting all those wonderful sounds. Could you do those again, Rich? Could you recap the difference between the owls for me?
Okay.
All right. The first one is?
The great horned owl. Horned owl.
Ooh, 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 ooh. No?
No, that sounds like a Great Dane.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Ooh, ooh. Wait a minute. Got to
try it again.
Go backwards here.
Yeah.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Okay.
Oh, 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 oh.
All right.
Yep. So that's that sequence of hoots and spaces.
Sure.
And then the barred owl. Ooh, 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 ooh.
I got to say, you could be on cartoons. You know,
we
McGill
can
a gorilla.
We can go there. Yes.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Tim in Ballston Spa. Tim, you're on.
Yeah, I was sitting with a neighbor the other day, and he asked me if cardinals made it for life. And then he said, and how long is that?
Okay.
So I asked Siri, and I came up with a range of they last about 1 year up to about the average of 15 years, 9 months.
Well, 15 years, 9 months would not be an average. That would be an extreme.
Yeah, this was some bird bander.
Yes, and that's how that data was gathered looking at the date that the bird was banded, if it were a young bird and a re-encounter 15 years and 9 months later, you could reach that figure. But on the average, most wild birds, on the average, taking all forms of life expectancies, about 3 years. And that includes a very high infant mortality. Most birds don't make it through year one. A high percentage.
More than 50%?
75%.
Wow.
Yes. And that's right across the spectrum from little hummingbirds to eagles.
Amazing.
Yes. But again, that's again a rough figure taken from a lot of sources and data points. But once it makes it past the year one, it'll exceed the 3-year average by maybe 4 or 5 years. Go to be 3 or 4 or 5 years old. So. In any event, and to answer your first question, is yes, they do mate for life, but fidelity is not the the factor in that formula. It's all about opportunity. And cardinals are non-migratory, so Mr. and Mrs. Cardinal are going to be around each other throughout the year. And so springtime comes, it says, oh, yeah, you again.
Nice.
Okay.
That's great.
And, but if something were to happen, it would be, okay, next.
Okay.
Yeah, I used to feed the birds, but after I acquired a cat named Stanley, I had to stop.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. But Stanley is out there looking for birds as well. You know, if he's outdoors.
And I think that was the point. All right, here's one via email from our friend Bonnie. Regarding the Bob White, Rich, how to improve my yard landscape to provide best habitat for these birds?
For Bob White.
Yeah.
Okay. Simple answer is move your yard to Virginia.
Oh, really? You can't get them around
not
here?
Not around here. Forget about it.
Just yeah. Not climate?
They've tried and tried and tried over the years. When I grew up, there were Bob Whites to be found here, there, and almost everywhere. But because they were just simply not suited for this area, the only population that we had were those that were being released by the Conservation Department or outdoor, like 4-H or other groups.
All right, why would the Conservation Department or 4-H release Bob Whites if they were, in fact, not well-suited to this region?
Sport hunting.
Oh.
They were just, it's like stocking fish in a stream.
Yeah.
You know, put them out there and then come hunting season, they're there.
Okay.
And the idea was back then, it was not uncommon back then to introduce stuff into the environment that really did not belong in the area. And so pheasants and Bob Whites are types of, and chukar partridge, Hungarian partridge, all of these things were tried at one time or another, and each of them failed.
Yeah.
The main reason is that they didn't belong here, and the species was not suitable for the Northeast habitat.
All right, makes sense. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Julie in Phoenicia. Julie, you're on.
Yes, hi. I'm very grateful to be on the show. I listen all the time.
Thank you.
I have two observations. One is something that happened day before yesterday. It was quite shocking to me because I am a backyard birder. It's a very remote area where I was, and it was at a neighbor's property, and I heard this awful screeching and squawking, and I knew it was something bad happening. And I looked around the corner. I didn't want to get too close because I don't want to interfere with animal-on-animal interaction, but it was a small hawk, or it might have been a falcon. It was very small on top of another bird. It had another bird pinned down. And that bird was screeching horribly. And I went away, and I came back a few minutes later, and the bird was still screeching. This raptor was eating the bird alive and was not killing the bird.
Well,
which, A, I thought was strange because it would be easier for the bird if the bird it was eating wasn't struggling. And it was just an awful scenario, and all in all, it took about 15 or 20 minutes for that bird to finally kill it. It was screeching for at least 15 minutes while the bird eating it.
That happens. It's very sad and very horrific to be watching, but it is, nature is, it ain't easy all the time.
I know. I mean, I know there's the indifference of nature, and but I just assumed that a raptor would kill the prey quickly because it's also easier.
It is, it's beneficial for the hawk to dispatch the prey rapidly because struggling prey can injure the hawk itself.
Sure.
It can attract other predators. I mean, there's
exactly
I got the feeling that it was probably a young, inexperienced bird.
That's right.
Otherwise, it might have dispatched it quicker. But I just have to say, I mean, I'm a wildlife rehabber. I see a lot of carnage in the animal world, and it was really, really just one of the most awful things I'd ever seen. And I wouldn't interfere. If I had known that it was going to go on for 15, 20 minutes, I almost felt like I should have stepped in, but, you know, you can't, right?
Yeah, right. Well, and I agree with you there. So it is unfortunate that, and you're probably right, it probably was a young hawk that took on something that was bigger than it could handle. And it was instinct takes over. They're too persistent to want to let go. I've seen where a blue jay and a sharp-shinned hawk were going at it, and eventually the hawk let the blue jay go. It was just way too much for it to tackle. But it doesn't always happen that way.
It might have been a blue jay because I know it was kind of a bigger bird.
Yes.
And they, later on, I heard the same kind of vocalization up in a tree, which I thought it might have been the blue jay's, friend or part of a small flock or something.
Probably, and they will, as you say, they will be attracted by that distress call. And rightly, as you point out, another raptor could come by and take over the scene. I've seen that happen out there, too. So,
Julie, I mean, even a fox or anything.
Exactly.
I just wanted to say one more thing. Being a wildlife rehabber, the best thing that anybody can do for the bird world is to keep their cats in. I also love cats. I take care of cats also, but they do so much damage. I think if people really understood the severity of the problem, and if they can't keep them in all the time, at least bring them in at night.
I agree, Julie. I agree.
It protects the cat too.
All right, Julie, we got to take a break, but thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support comes from the Honest Wait Food Co-op, located at 100 Waterville Ave in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. Honestwait.coop. Stone Soup Concrete, East Hampton, Massachusetts, specializing in concrete countertops, sinks, bathtubs, furniture, and architectural elements, serving the Pioneer Valley and New England. StonesoupConcrete.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Dr. Brian Strickler at Schenectady Eye Associates, performing laser-assisted cataract surgery with a Lens X laser and advanced bladeless cataract surgery technique. SchenectadyEyeSurgery.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We talk birds today. We do it once a month. Rich Guthrie is here for you. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And Rich, some events coming up.
Well, I have this wonderful event coming up on Saturday the 13th, and that is down in Athens, New York, on the Hudson River, south of Albany.
Yep.
And the Green Land Trust is sponsoring a chicken barbecue, speaking of birds.
Yeah.
And
you feel kind of funny?
Oh, not at all. I love
eating chicken at a bird event.
Hey, I'm a predator. What can I say?
All right, man.
I'm in there.
Keep going.
And that will be Saturday afternoon down at the Willows. That will be, by the way, this is all in conjunction with a bird walk, guided walks around the grounds of the Willows, which is a historic old farmhouse, 18th century farmhouse that overlooks the Hudson River, in conjunction with the Athens Community Day, village-wide. That will have things such as tours of the Athens Lighthouse out on the Hudson River.
Yeah.
And, of course, a chicken barbecue by the Greenland Trust.
So if you're on the bird walk, you find a chicken, you slap it on the barbecue, right?
We'll take care of that for you.
Okay, fair enough. What else is going on? Anything else?
Well, that plus the hawk watches and bird walks. And now's the time to get out, you know. And especially, let me just reflect on the somber day that we're recognizing
Indeed.
Today. And here is where I find solace in nature, being the opportunity to get out and enjoy the beauty of the world and escape some of the trials and tribulations of the rest of what's going on around us. And the late fall flowers, the fall foliage, the bird migration, the butterflies, and the like. This is a great avenue of quiet of relaxation.
Well said, Mr. Guthrie. Let's go to Andrew in Schenectady. Andrew.
Yeah, quick question. quick question for you. The other morning, I came out early in the morning, and I saw a bird literally hovering over maybe about 6 inches to a foot over the lawn. And I guess my thought was I only thought hummingbirds were able to, like, basically fly in a stationary position for any length of time. But this thing was hovering for, you know, probably 15 seconds. And that was the first time I had ever seen a bird like that hover other than seeing a hummingbird. So I was curious as to, one, what it might be, and two, how many birds other than a hummingbird can do that kind of flying or hovering or whatever.
Great question.
Well, nobody does it like the hummingbird in the bird world. However, how big was this bird that you saw anyway?
Maybe a little bigger, like maybe a 1.5 times the size of a sparrow, something in that range.
Oh, wow. Okay. So rather...
A little bigger than a sparrow, maybe.
Okay. Well, one bird that will do that, well, a couple of them that come to mind. A type of flycatcher called the phoebe is capable of hovering like that. It's a dark bird with light underneath. And also the bluebird is capable of hovering in that fashion. And some of the other ones, if they have to, they'll find something that they'll want to get at and wait for an insect to make a move or whatever. It will hover in that way. And some of our hawks will hover. The American kestrel is a fairly, well, let's see, it's about robin size or thereabouts. And it is quite an accomplished bird when it comes to hovering.
Hmm.
And the larger bird, the red-tailed hawk, is known for hovering at what we call hooking. And the red, the rough-legged hawk, which comes down in the wintertime, another one of these broad, wide-winged hawks, will come down in the wintertime, and they are capable of hovering in a stationary flight.
Wow. Yeah, I've seen hummingbirds, but I never had seen that before, so I was kind of like, wow, it was really pretty. I mean, see something like that.
Yes.
And I was pretty amazed. And now that you're telling me all the other birds, it's like, wow, I guess pretty, learning a lot through this show. And I thank you for all your information.
You're quite welcome. Thank
Andrew,
you, Andrew.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Maureen in Fort Ann. Maureen, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for the show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
I have a question about some birds that I see only at night. We live out in the middle of nowhere, and for probably 4 or 5 years, it seems that it's almost like a flock is beginning to develop. Right alongside the road, these birds have long legs and a long beak and kind of brown with light underneath. And they make a kind of a squealy noise.
Okay.
I don't know, summer or winter, they are always on the side of the road. And I think even after a snowstorm and there's big snowbanks, you drive down that part of the road and they just seem to fly out of nowhere.
Okay. It sounds like actually several different kinds of birds come to mind when you describe them like that. At this time of year, long legs and on the side of the road might be one of our type of shorebirds called the killdeer. Which will gather in flocks, and they like open spaces, and if the shoulder of the road will be preferred on occasion, so they might be out there. And then in the wintertime, we have these birds, the open field birds, that come down, and they particularly like the shoulders of the roads for nothing else, the grit and salt that's down there that they will use to help digest their food. And they like the shoulders of the roads as well, the horned larks and the snow buntings. I'm thinking there's probably different kinds of birds through different times of the year that you're running into that are out there in Fort Ann area.
Well, they seem to be the same bird. I mean, they take off and they almost look like a bat. Their wingspan, it's light underneath and they're dark on the top.
Well, of course, the sparrows like to again come to the shoulder of the road for the grit that's available, the sand and salt and the open space that's there. So it's hard to say exactly what they might be, but I'm thinking that it's probably, again, a variety of birds through the course of the year. In the springtime, most birds will disperse and pair off into their singular bonding, but then later on they'll gather up in flocks. Blackbirds and killdeers and larks will do that at various times of the year.
Okay, now even in the wintertime after this kind of snowstorm, they see
the
snowbanks, they are still in the same, I mean, it's the same spot.
Especially in the wintertime when open space and that material is not readily available. Then they are definitely drawn to the shoulders of the road.
Okay.
Okay.
Maureen,
all right.
Thank
you. What was the first bird that you said?
Killdeer. Try killdeer.
Killdeer. Okay. Yeah. Long legs, a long beak.
Yes. And a screechy sound.
Okay. Yeah, and a squeaky sound. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Bye,
thank
Maureen.
You.
Let's go to Tom and Clinton. Tom, you're on.
Great. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a pretty simple question. This spring, my family gave me a screech owl house.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I live in a pretty rural area. My house is surrounded with grass, but then beyond the grass, I have trees all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, where's the best location for my screech owl house to attract them to live there?
Okay, first, that's a great idea. Screech owl nest boxes quite often will work. Mm. If not necessarily by screech owls, then perhaps by wood ducks, or American kestrels, all beneficial birds to invite to your neighborhood.
Why?
Well, because they're nice to have around. Wood ducks, who can argue that?
Okay.
And kestrels, a bird that is much in need of assistance because their numbers have been dwindling, and a suitable nest box will improve the chances of their recovering and numbers increasing. One thing about screech owl nest boxes is be sure to put a little bit of carpeting of white pine needles or wood chips on the floor. They almost invariably will select a box with those and reject a box without those. The placement could be almost anywhere. Screech owls will take the box over no matter where it's located, but the best location would be at the edge of the woods and, for your purposes, a place where you could see it from with comfort from the house.
Right.
You know,
what,
where you could look
at. What about location? What about height off the ground?
Height off the ground is not critically important.
Okay.
So what you want to do is you want to put it up there so that it's comfortable for you to get it in place and in a, on a tree or a pole that's likely to stay. One of the worst things, and I've done this myself, is put them up on an elm tree, only to have the elm tree die and fall down, and then everything is. And now, if you have even a side of a building might work.
Okay.
But and then facing a direction where you might be able to see it. Now, a good friend of mine who put a screech owl nest box, and he was quite surprised to find out that saw-wet owls had moved in. And so he was able to, you know, that was a wonderful benefit, unexpected consequences.
All right, Tom, we're going to move it along, but thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Marty in Pittsfield. Marty, you're on.
Yes, hi. I've been listening to your program, and every time I hear Rich Guthrie,
uh-oh,
I want to call and ask him this question. When I was very young, probably in the late 50s, early 1960s, my family used to vacation in Richmond, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And every morning I could hear a songbird that I can replicate the sound pretty good. But the funny thing is I haven't heard it since then.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, the sound would go something like this, and it sounded like there were two birds calling back and forth. It would go...
Oh, okay. It sounds like... I would think that it has a more musical sound rather than a whispery sound that you just presented.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah, if you hear it off in the distance, it almost has a whispery sound.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, but the downward spirally sound effect that the bird song had. And it would be in the evening, and they would be more than one. It sounds to me like the veery. V as in Victor, E-E-R-Y, veery, which is a type of a songbird that has a beautiful, beautiful song spiraling downward, sings towards the evening. It's related to the nightingale, so it would have that effect, and has over the course of time dwindled in numbers. Now, mainly because of habitat change, they like low, wet woods, and for the most part. So I would suspect that it was probably something to do with habitat change for the veery.
You're pretty sure about that?
I'm darn certain.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. Marty, you're all set.
I always heard it in the early morning.
Oh, that too. They will sing in the morning. They are twilight or dusk or crepuscular songsters.
Uh-huh. And the chance of hearing them these days is pretty slim?
Oh, no. If you go to the right place, if out in the Pittsfield area, if you go down to Canoe Meadows, the Mass Audubon Sanctuary.
Yeah, very familiar with that place.
Okay. If you go down there in the spring morning or a late afternoon or evening, I'm certain that you'll hear very singing in the down along the Housatonic.
Okay. Marty, thank you so much for the call. We'll go over to Dave in Pittsfield. Dave.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about a robin. This took place probably back in the middle of the summer in July. And my wife called me to the window, and she's like, Dave, what's wrong with that robin? And I looked out, and there was a robin in the grass on the ground, and it looked like he was almost, or she was almost leaning back on its tail feathers. So I decided to take a walk outside. I thought maybe he flew into the window. And when I got out there and he saw me, he just got up and flew away. And a couple days later, farther away from the house, I saw another robin doing the same thing. It almost looked like he was facing the sun and leaning back and just sunning himself. Huh.
Exactly. And that's, really? That's I presume that's exactly what it was doing. And a number of birds will do this. They'll spread their wings and their tail, and they'll just lean back, and they have this this look as though they're in ecstasy, just soaking up the sun rays, and they're totally motionless for a long period of time. I've seen robins do that, and wrens, and blue jays, and bluebirds, and other, it's all about, I presume, something to do with clearing out parasites. That's what I've heard, but it's hard to say. To me, they look like they're just enjoying a nice sunshine.
Well, David, thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Bonnie and Sharon. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi.
This is a bird ID question.
All right.
A couple of years ago, I was driving between Sharon and Amenia, and I was driving my pickup truck, and suddenly a bird flew in front of my vehicle. And sort of, it's as if he was driving in traffic. He was flying ahead of me by about 20 feet, and he was a huge bird, and he kept to the road. Mm-hmm. And I kind of slowed down so I wouldn't catch up to him, and he followed the road until, you know, like a, maybe a count of 20, until he flew up into a branch. But what was really shocking was his size. I was driving, I was looking at this thing, and tip to tip, he was his wingtips were almost the width of the road.
Wow.
The road?
I don't mean double lane. I mean, like, the lane I was in.
Oh, even so.
Pterodactyl? What do you got
so
there?
So I'm thinking, no, I think he was an eagle.
Okay.
I think he was an immature, probably an immature American eagle.
Well, yeah. What month was this?
It was September, sort of like late September.
Okay.
It was
so
dark.
Autumn.
I never got to see any, there was no stripes, there were no white tips or white heads or anything like that.
Okay.
And I didn't look at his underside because I needed to keep my eye on the road.
Sure, of course.
Good plan.
But it did not have a long neck. It wasn't a heron.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good. Well, then I would go, or perhaps a vulture, a turkey vulture. That
no, I know all too well.
Okay. Well, then, you know, it narrows it right down to, as you suggest, a young eagle. Eagles will be attracted to roadkill on occasion. Not very often, especially if it's off on the shoulder of the road.
Yeah. That's often big, though, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, there's not much out there bigger than an eagle. So, so what I'm thinking is that perhaps, you know, your perception was a little bit.
It was 20 feet away from the little thing.
I understand.
Well, but not so little thing.
Yes.
Wow.
But you're looking at it ahead of you, and it, you know, the.
Where did you see this, Bonnie?
Between Sharon and Amenia on that road.
Dutchess County.
I'd be very afraid. That sounds like there's some mutant eagles. And well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. But thank you very much. On a frightening, horrifying note,
not
giant eagles the size of roads. And I'm not going to sleep too well tonight.
Well, if it were a bluebird, then you would need to worry, but it's not.
All right, fair enough.
We have large birds out there.
Well, Rich, thanks a lot. We'll see you next time. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Edward Garbosik, certified financial planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, serving Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. Snow Farm, studio craft workshops for adults and teens, glass blowing, woodworking, ceramics, jewelry, and much more. Simple dorms, homemade meals, and four seasons in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Snowfarm.org. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Make sure you take WAMC with you. We have a lovely app. You can get it at the Google Play Store or iTunes. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. Stay tuned now for the news.